Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And wherever you are, I hope you are having an utterly magnificent day, and I'm appreciative, or evening. Well, I'm appreciative of your taking time to, well, spend some time with me out of your busy schedule. We have got a delightful guest today. Kawana Halsey is her name. This woman is an accomplished writer, but her book that she put out just recently is really quite charming, and it comes from an understanding of how you learn and grow through life's experiences, especially when it's with one of our little people. And what I'm referring to is her book, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned from My 6-Month-Old. And she said it was awakening to a whole new level of herself. Kawana Halsey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a delight. Now, Kawana, you have received acknowledgments for your writing. You've won awards. You were, in 2007, the Penn Faulkner Foundation honoree. You were named one of the 3 New Voices in American Literature. Angel of Harlem, which you wrote, was chosen as one of the New York Public Library's books for the teenager. Writing is something that you just really, really enjoy, and I can relate to that. But you've also written features and poems, but this book especially really came from your heart. It came because when you have a baby, it changes one's life 180 degrees. I always chuckle whenever I see these wonderful commercials about the perfect mom and the perfect baby and everything's just sanitary. And I
right.
go, I think this is someone that has to be at least, well, they just don't have a grip on reality. They just don't do it. And we just sit and laugh. I laugh anyway, and I know just about every other woman on the planet that has a baby does the same thing. When you decided to put this together, it was really from some of the journaling you did, is it not?
Theoretic journaling. I was journaling in my mind because I didn't really have time to put it down on a piece of paper. But I would keep these little anecdotes in my head because I would think, that should be a book. That should be a book. That's hilarious. That should be a book. But at first I didn't have a real idea of doing it as a book. And then one day it struck me that, you know, this is something that would be wonderful to have conversation about with people,
mm-hmm.
to talk about from motherhood from a different perspective, you know, not that sanitized perspective that you're talking about. Because, you know, on the one hand, I think that that's mostly what we get. We get that in the media. We get that through advertising. You know, it's all over the place, that sanitized perspective. And it's great when we can laugh at it, but I think a lot of times, especially for new mothers who maybe don't have that much experience with babies, like I know I didn't. I didn't know anything about babies.
Mm-hmm.
And you believe that that's what it's supposed to be like. And so then when it's not like that, you go, oh, well, there's something wrong with me. I'm not getting this, you know.
I just absolutely am fascinated with tiny ones because when you have a baby, from the very moment they're born, they have their own personality. They have an awareness that is utterly phenomenal. And you can look at a baby that is just a couple of minutes old, and many times they will open up their eyes, they'll look at you directly, and it's like, I'm here. Be prepared. Your life is going to change from this moment on. And that is the truth. It is just
yes.
amazing. I have never, ever in my life experience met a baby that did not have a personality and did not have this something inside of them that they came in with. They are a comprehensive little package. And I loved how you made the description in your book like this. You said, children don't arrive in this world as blank slates to be written upon. They come to us imbued with proclivities, insights, and gifts. Boy, is that the truth.
Yeah.
It's incredible. That is what they bring in, right then, right there. And sometimes when you're carrying a child, you'll already know about their personality type.
Yes.
They'll
yes,
let
exactly
you know.
Exactly how they are inside the tummy is how they come out.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, it's really something. Now, when your son, you have two boys.
Yes.
And the very first part of your book, your introduction, you said, my son plays with angels on a regular basis. And I just chuckled. I thought, what a charming way to begin your introduction. Now, when you made that statement, what was it in your experience that made you aware of that?
Well, I think I wrote that line a little bit later in the process, like after I had finished the book and I was going back and I was revising, and I was thinking about a number of different things. I was thinking about how when he was that age, he did appear at times to be talking to people or laughing or doing things, and I was like, who is in here? Who is he looking at? What's going on? And I just assumed. I says, okay, well, he's talking to his guardian angels. That's what I decided in my mind. And I realized much later on that it was true. It's 100% true, because when I was pregnant with my second son, and I was about maybe 2.5, 3 months along, and, you know, we were reading up about it, you know, how to make the adjustment more palatable for the older child and blah, blah, blah. And most of the literature says, you know, don't tell them anything until, you know, you're much further along and you're visibly showing, because young children can't conceptualize that there's somebody in your tummy when they can't see it. And Kingston says to me one night, we were, you know, snuggling, and he says, Mommy, there's a baby in here. I said, what baby? He said, there's a baby here. And I says, well, where's the baby? And he pointed up towards the ceiling, and he says, right there. And I was like, oh, well, I said, well, what does he look like? And he said, a baby? Like, duh. What did you think he's going to look like? I laughed, and so I was like, well, yes, that is your baby. That's your baby hanging out. And so I know literally it's true. They do see and hear what we cannot see and hear.
Mm-hmm.
And from the perspective of just being open channels and open vessels, I think that's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You make a statement, and that's why I think this book, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned from My Six-Month-Old, would be just wonderful for young moms. And I think it's also good for grandmothers to be reminded of what it's like or what they went through. It might have been a different type of experience. But you say how your first son helped raise you as well as you raising him. And many times I think that that is the case, especially with a firstborn. I don't care how many books you read. It's a whole new experience. Most of the time we end up saying, forget the book. Just trust yourself. That's what we will, as mature people, tell younger women, trust yourself, because you already have something built into you that will know what to do. And if you don't, then just ask. And in our culture, sadly enough, we don't often embrace the environment of sharing stuff until a certain phase. And I think that that is a disservice to young women. I think being involved with a family, if you're fortunate enough to have mature women that will help you, that will interact with you, this is wonderful, because they can save you a lot of heartache and a lot of headache. But you really are very candid in your book. And you said, with your firstborn, were you prepared to be a mom? Heck no. There was no way on God's earth that you really were all ready to go and prepared. Is anybody ever really prepared? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think we are, because, you know, we read the books and we watch the TV shows, and, you know, we have this idea of what it's going to be like, and it's never anything like what we think it's going to be like. Whatever it is, it's not what we thought it was going to be. For me, like I said, I didn't have much experience with babies, so at least I knew that I didn't know what I was doing. And so I wasn't under this idea that I was supposed to know. So for that, I think it made it a little easier for me to be open. you know, be open to the experience and be open to being changed by the experience.
Oh, that's the truth. Yeah, I liked your one sentence in your book. You said, a newborn baby is a living, breathing, screaming, pooping meditation. Well, a lot of mothers would say, what do you mean meditation? Who has time to meditate? My eyes are wide open. I'm sleep deprived. The baby's got colic. It's screaming. I just don't know what to do. And I can remember those moments very, very vividly. And when people will give you this romanticized version of what things might be like, I liked what you said in another portion of the book. She says, does anybody tell you that within just a very short period of time before lunch, you're going to be experiencing a lot of love for this child, boredom, exhaustion, pain, fear, loneliness, frustration, joy, laughter, wonder, amazement, doubt, and that can happen all within 30 minutes with your baby. I mean, this is something that I don't think many people are willing to talk about. They just, it's like, no, we'll keep this sort of a secret. You want to go around, and I'll tell you, it's to me, if you have a good sense of humor, you're really going to make it. Now, one of the gifts that you said your son gave you as a baby was understanding how to stay focused. And that is something that babies are very good at. When they want something, they will stay entirely focused. And that's what you do throughout this book. You give these little ahas that you developed. And what was it in your life that you weren't very focused with?
Oh, gee. Now that I look back on it, I realize it was like everything. You know, I am, you know, one of those people who has a lot of ideas and thoughts, and I want to do this and I want to do that. And I thought I was being focused, but I had so many interruptions that I entertained. And, you know, when dealing with Kingston, I began to see he did not entertain interruption. You know, he was focused. When he needed something, if he wanted milk, he wanted milk, and he wanted it right now. And I think a lot of people misunderstand the focus of babies. And, you know, I think that's where those ideas like, oh, if you give the baby what they want, they're going to start manipulating you and things like that. And just all these crazy ideas about what babies do, I think it comes from a misunderstanding of babies' intention. Babies have very strong intention. They have spiritual intention, and people don't realize that. I think they mistake it and take it for a lot of other things. And I thought, I knew for sure that I needed to learn from that. Rather than trying to teach him my way of being, I needed to learn that way of being that honored what I wanted and needed in the moment and allowed myself to have it, you know, instead of getting distracted, instead of entertaining the interruptions, instead of not even acknowledging to myself what I wanted and needed, which I think is a big one for many women. You know, you're so used to...
I think it's very big.
Doing what you think you need to do and keeping everybody else afloat that you don't even acknowledge. This is
now
what
you
I
bring
really
up a
want.
Very good point. And women, I've seen this happen over and over and over again, and I've been guilty of it too. And that is with the focus. One of the things about being a mom, especially after a new baby, everything gets attention but yourself.
Yes.
And I love the chapter that you had about how when you got dressed, you just put on sloppy clothes. You didn't take time to really give yourself what you needed for yourself. And let's face it, when you start bringing children into the world, there isn't a heck of a lot of extra time. And I think that one of the biggest frustrations that women have is that they stop paying attention to themselves, and then one day they look in the mirror and they're haggard, their hair is a mess, they look like they came out of the local dumpster with the way that they dress. That was a big wake-up call for you, wasn't it?
Yes.
Now, what did you do to counteract that? Because that is something many women will say, well, I just don't have the energy for this. What did you do that enabled you to make that turnaround where you said, wait a minute, I deserve to have my hair nicely combed, look attractive. I want to feel good about me when I go out walking that baby in a stroller. I don't want to look like something that came from the local junkyard.
Right. You know, It's something that I've had two mindsets about, and one of them being that it's necessary to carve out time in the day, no matter what. You know, it's as important as eating and you know, getting rest and all of those other things. And, you know, like right now I have one of my good friends, and she's my workout partner. And three times a week, she keeps me honest, we go, Corey takes the babies, and we go work out, you know. And it's harder even now with two instead of one, but it's worth it. It's worth that extra effort. And, you know, and also the second part of that is also acknowledging that there are going to be times where this is just what it is. Yeah, I look like a bum today, and I'm going to embrace my bumness, and it's just going to be okay today because that's where I am, instead of being in judgment and anger and frustration. And because I think it allows, for at least for me, it allows me to bounce back much faster and doing what I want to do and doing what I need to do if I have not allowed myself to go into judgment about what I haven't done.
Now, that's a very good point, because we can always have our to-do list that's 5 miles long. And when you have children, it just it's like the Energizer Bunny. It just keeps going and going and going and going. So you do have to draw a line somewhere. And let's come back to what you mentioned about your husband, Corey. You'll turn the kids over to him and say, okay, I'm out of here. Well, I had to chuckle, because with your firstborn, you really became aware of the fact that one of the reasons that there's such high rate of divorce among couples is that men typically see the charge and the raising of children, that's a woman's job. And I had to chuckle when you said postpartum depression is actually the technical medical term for the condition known as lazy husband. And you said your husband, when you told him that, didn't find it funny at all. He said, how can you call me lazy when I haven't done anything? And I just thought, oh, boy, right there. There you go. That's it. That's when the sirens go off. And I think that there is that natural patterning. I mean, you look back culturally. You go back centuries, and the women were the ones that were the caretakers of the children, obviously, because they're nursing and they're taking care of it. But the men totally disassociated from it. They, in many cultures, not just in the American culture, but in many cultures. Now, in America, that is changing a bit. There are a lot of men that are enjoying being stay-at-home dads. They might have a career or something on the side. But the role reversal in our culture has been evolving on a gradual basis, and men are finding that they really enjoy children. But there's a lot of men that really don't want to get involved with kids until they start to really talk and walk, and then it's okay, now you can come with dad. You know, it's a very interesting patterning. I don't know that it's abnormal. I just think it's interesting.
Well, that's been my experience as well, with just with friends that I know, and I found that the people who continue to maintain really happy relationships are the ones who do share a more equitable, you know, a share of the child and household duties and whatever that looks like. It looks different for everyone that I know, but even people, oddly enough, even my friends who end up breaking up or who have been divorced, they are the best co-parents when they are able to equitably share the duties. And I think that is so critical because, number one, not only is it giving the mom a chance to recharge and reset when she can trust that, okay, dad really has this. He's not going to be crazed and the kids are not going to be running wild like little maniacs. No, he can handle this, you know, because you can step back with confidence and take a minute to recharge yourself. But also, you know, the dads really benefit from that bonding experience that they don't get, you know, when they, like you were explaining, you know, they turn it over, I'll come back when he's three, you know, get him past the terrible twos, make sure he's talking, make sure he's potty trained, I'll be back, you know. They miss out on this amazing bonding experience, you know, from that perspective. And so I think Corey gets that now. You know, in the beginning, he was like, oh, no, you got it. You're okay. You know, mm-hmm. and in actually dealing with Kingston and developing his own relationship with him, I think he realized that he didn't want to miss out on that. And,
yes, and it just it creates such a special bonding, the mm-hmm. children and their fathers. Fathers are so important. It's really the mom has a very significant position, and so does the dad. That partnership,
yeah.
that fellowship with their children is just priceless. And when you can work together as a team and support each other, and you're going to go through your ups and downs because every child is very different. And I wanted to address something that you bring out in your book. You have this wonderful section in your book where you talk about how you were in Kenya and you were able to experience culturally so many different things. And then you fast forward in your storytelling to 15 years later, and your life hadn't worked out the way that you had, let's say, planned it to be. And, of course, again, when babies come into the picture, they can change things very, very quickly. And you really wanted to come into an understanding that just because you were a mother, it didn't mean you had to give up your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And you gave a lot of thought to this. You're a professional individual. You love your work. You love your family. And you can have both. For so many generations, it was first in the Western world. If you were a woman, one, you couldn't really have a career. That just wasn't acceptable. Then we go into the cycle where during World War II, women in the United States stepped up to the bar because the guys were all fighting overseas, so somebody had to run businesses in this country. Women found out, gee whiz, they're just as good as the guys. So they do an efficient job. They're building planes, doing all kinds of stuff. And then when the men come back, the women are disenfranchised because we've got to have jobs for the guys. And the women say, we need some changes here because I want to develop something in my life. And then the next thing is we have the 60s, we have the 70s. We go through all of these shifts and these changes. And then there seemed to be a real war that went on within women. They were failures as mothers if they tried to do a career. They were put down if they had a career, and because they were supposed to be like the Victorian woman of the 1800s. And they just felt lost. You're a modern-day woman. Did you have the same kind of war inside of you? And if so, how did you deal with it?
Well, I think I was almost kind of the opposite in that, you know, everyone that I knew always worked. There weren't really many or any stay-at-home moms when I was growing up. Everybody worked. 'Cause, you know, I was born and raised in New York, you know, in a working class area, and it's just, you know, what people had to do. They weren't even talking about careers. It's just what you had to do to survive, you
mm-hmm.
know. So most of the people I knew worked outside of the home. So I always assumed that I would, too. I would just, you know, have the baby, take a few weeks off, rest, recharge. Okay, get back at it. What do you want to do now? And I didn't know any better, and I didn't think any more deeply about it until he was actually born. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not leaving him. And I had to really think on the fly and say, okay, well, now what can that look like? To be here with him and to be his primary caregiver while still moving my career forward and making money and doing all these necessary things. And it's been a real learning curve and how to do that, and I'm often struck by how good we have it in this generation, in
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we have options available just through technology alone. You know, we have options available that no other generation has had, you know, options to telecommute, you know, like how we're having this wonderful, beautiful conversation on the phone right now, you know.
Right.
There are just so many options. You can be anywhere doing anything, and it made me really realize how important it is to set intentions, to have goals, and to be able to have to follow through to make them come to fruition. Because I realized I could do whatever I wanted to do. I was the one who was in charge of what that looked like, because it didn't have to look like the paths of previous generations. You know, it's not that old argument. I think people are having the wrong argument. They're having an outdated discussion about, you know, the mommy wars, the stay-at-home versus the working moms, and that's totally outdated. And it's, you know, I don't know any real moms who have those wars, you know, the quote-unquote wars amongst themselves. You know, we have a whole different host of concerns and different modalities for doing what we want and need to do. And I think we are much better served in exploring those things and
I
knowing
agree.
That it doesn't have to look a certain way in order to be, quote-unquote, the right way. We're making our own right way. We're making the way. I always say there is no such thing as a right way or a wrong way. There are ways that work for you and ways that will not work for you or don't work for you. And the people who are happiest and most in charge and in control in their lives are the people who find the ways that work. And
there is only
that.
Time enough to iron your cape and back to the skies for you, Jason Harley. This is a quote. And you also have another one, before the beginning of great brilliance, there must be chaos, and that's Super K Fortune Cookie. And one of the things that you learned that you said was very significant is that you had to learn how to stop chasing after things that you wanted and start accepting and receiving what you actually needed to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean by that?
I have a long list of things that I wanted to have, to do, to be, to experience, and I had to come to the realization that while it's wonderful to have preferences, and I still definitely have preferences about, you know, the things that I want out of life, what I have attracted into my experience has been, without exception, the things that I need to become more aware and awake. And not to get too deep into it, but there are generational patterns that can be disrupted through me. You know, a friend of mine had this wonderful quote that I love, that I think about all the time, where he said, the prayers of my ancestors are being answered through me right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are much bigger things than I could have thought about with my little mind that are becoming awake and aware through me at this time. And part of accepting that is being surrendered to the idea that I don't know everything and I can't control everything. And my life is much bigger than I thought it could or would be. And so to allow my experiences to inform me and to change me makes me prepared for that largesse to come through. Do you know what I'm saying? Rather than trying to hold on and control everything.
I do know what you're saying. Kuwana Halsey, we're just about out of time. Your book is charming. It really is. It would make a perfect gift for a new mom, even for one that's having her second child or third child, because I think the story allows you to come in touch with who you are as a woman in a wonderful perspective of today's environment. And you can go to Kuwana Halsey's website, and it's Kuwana Halsey, KuwanaHalsey.com, and you'll find out more about her wonderful publications, also about her book, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned from My 6-Month-Old. And I think it is absolutely charming. It would make a great gift for someone that maybe needs to be aware that motherhood, well, it does fit vaguely some of the things that we often are told it fits, but it's always a very unique experience to the woman herself. And it is life-changing. So we can use all the help we can get. Kuwana Halsey, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Kawana. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime, or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a call, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. For those of you that are really concerned about healthcare coverage, I was the recipient of some detailed information, and I'm going to give you some websites later on in the show that you can go to check out some information that Consumer Reports has done research on. I know for so many of you, and even the Sebo family, we're just scratching our heads because there's so much that is in flux. And, of course, this is always a big issue, but I will be sharing that information with you later on this morning in the show. So just be aware, I will be giving you those websites where you can go and check out information as you desire to do it. Again, give me a call. Phone lines are open at 888-627-6008. At any one time on this planet of ours, there are, well, what is it, about 20 wars going on? I remember when I first heard that statistic many years ago, I was stunned. But it happens all over the globe. Most of it will never get into the media, but it is going on. This is a typical patterning of the human being for whatever reason. I cannot answer that myself. But there was a war that was only 38 minutes long. What was that war? It was Anglo-Zanzibar War of 1896. That was the shortest war in history. Now, in today's world, there's more and more awareness because of our technology and because of our capacity of communicating through photography and through the spoken word that things are going on. This is unprecedented. This was not even remotely possible just a few years ago. And today, it goes viral. Well, in the world today, because of this, we're finding out about environments where people, slave labor, children that are in very, very oppressive, it's a form of slavery, it really is, in different parts of the world, and how products and materials, like minerals and all kinds of things, are processed because of this. Well, now, because of technology, people are getting information out about what's going on. And this is some information that I just recently had crossed my desk, and I thought, this is incredible. 11% of jewelry stores in the United States have a very strict rule that they will not buy diamonds from a supplier that uses child labor, employs slavery of any kind. They just aren't doing it. And there are other applications that are being passed along, and it has to do with some of the materials that go into our cell phones and our computers because of certain practices going on in very much third world countries, and saying, we won't support this. We will not do business with you because this is what you're doing. And it's having a major impact. Little by little, it's having an impact, causing some changes in those environments. And I find that it's fascinating. I know of a major food manufacturer, processor, that before trucks are before they're able to unload any of what they might have that this company is going to be using for their products, they will do a test. And if it's a genetically modified something, they'll send the truck back. They have very strict rules, very strict regulations, and they enforce it. And it's happened more than once. They've even had food items coming from overseas that were not up to the standard they want. And this is in their contract. If you do this, that, or the other, we will return at your cost the product that you are selling to us. This is really making a difference. And it's something we consumers need to be aware of, that we walk and talk with our wallets. If we do not want to support something because we know it is not the right thing, we need to not buy it. And eventually, those businesses get the message. It's really quite amazing. And I just wanted to bring out a couple of those points. Again, I'm just so intrigued with what I'm seeing and evolving and the conscientious attention that is being given by individuals. And it usually starts with a very small group. And then when big people become aware and the word goes viral, as it does so often with social networking, it is really quite exciting. It's really amazing how we can have changes evolve because of the choices we make. So it does, you know, it is worthwhile paying attention to what it is we want to contribute towards and what it is we choose to discern may not be for our best interest and separate ourselves from. It's the process that we go through on a daily basis. And I think the more that we can wake up to that opportunity, realize how fortunate we are to be able to do that, the better off we're going to be. Scientists have discovered a new weapon. That's right. And what is it? Well, it comes from a study with bats. Now, those of us that have done any reading about bats, we all know that they have their own unique type of sonar. And it actually, when it's flying, when it's out hunting insects, whatever it is that it's doing, the sonar frequency that it emits actually intensifies. And if they see an insect or sense one, that sonar actually increases to such a level that, to the best of science's awareness, the bat itself will be able to get this very clear picture of what they're moving in on. Well, there is a university, Wake Forest University, said that because of a particular species, a tiger moth that's native to Arizona, it can detect when a bat is going to detect it. It has its own kind of radar, and then it can take the appropriate evasive action. Now, what is it that this moth that specifically is in the Arizona desert does? What does it do? Well, it has a sonar jamming system. Yes, Mother Nature has a lot we can learn from. Now, this is what the moth does. The Arizona moth switches on its jamming system, and it's very unique. This is the only living item that is able to do this, to the best of science's knowledge at this time. It produces ultrasonic clicking sounds at the rate of 4,500 times per second. How did this develop? Who knows? But it does. And what it does, it blurs the image that the bat is receiving. Now, Aaron Cochran is a wildlife biologist, and he said, they have studied this, and it's so fascinating because even though the bat knows that the moth is there, it can't quite figure out, first of all, what it is. Is it edible? Is it not edible? And two, it can't really get the, what you want to say, the detection factor so it can move quickly to get its prey. And it just is a fascinating phenomenon. So they're incorporating this and trying to figure out how they can utilize what this little moth in Arizona is doing in a way that can, well, benefit us on other levels. When we study Mother Nature, there is so much that she has in her bag of tricks. And so often, it might be with just one species or another species. But we human beings, through the centuries, when we've taken time to observe Mother Nature, often have figured out what we can do to better our own life environment in one way or another. So it's really, really a fascinating thing. And that's why, hey, this little moth is literally winning an air war against one of its enemies, the little bat. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, let me tell you what I perceive. And then you're welcome to ask me anything you like about anything that is of concern to you. 888-627-6008. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the frugal foodie. Laura Starr is my guest. And in today's environment, so many people are dealing with, what do I want to say, tight budgets. And she has some wonderful suggestions, so we're going to be talking about that. And then on Friday, we're going to be speaking with a shaman, Don Oscar Miro Quesada. Is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about lessons in courage, and we're going to be experiencing some of the journey of life that he has gone through himself. So I think you'll find these guests just really, really interesting. Donna Sebo here, and we will continue to keep those lines open for you. Give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Medical cures that work. It is really amazing how we have discovered little things that can make such a difference. Hydrogen peroxide. It is something that physicians, when they have that with them, they can work in some of the worst areas on the planet and deal with situations that would cause infection, et cetera. And it has been used in so many, many ways that it's very cost-effective, very inexpensive. You can research it on the Internet, find out about it. Well, here are some things that you have. One of these items you probably have in your drawer in your kitchen or even on a shelf in your garage. And what is that? It is the ever-amazing duct tape. That's right. People often have utilized duct tape for medical purposes. You know, if you have a wart, if you put a piece of duct tape on it, the wart will come off. That's right. You leave it on there, something happens, and it disappears. And it's actually, they feel better than trying to freeze a wart. Just put the duct tape on, and it will work. People have used duct tape when surgeries, emergency surgeries, have had to be performed in areas where they didn't have anything else. They didn't have catgut or whatever it is that they use today. By golly, the duct tape held everything in place. And, of course, you guys know how handy it is. It can hold just about anything together. I was sent a series of pictures by someone, and I just laughed. I laughed so hard. They said, this is how guys fix things. And it was holding bumpers onto cars. I mean, it was just amazing the way these fellows had utilized duct tape. Also, now this you may not have in your medicine cabinet, but leeches. Now, leeches have been used for generations, but in modern medicine, they started employing them because they found that they were very, very handy in keeping blood from coagulating during surgery on tiny vascular tissue. And you know what? In reconstructive surgery, leeches help to renew blood flow to reattached body parts. So here is a creature that if ever you've seen the movie, The African Queen, it's an oldie movie, but always it's just dynamic. One of my favorite actresses, Katharine Hepburn, and Humphrey Bogart. And leeches, ugh, they have scenes in there where it just makes your skin crawl. But they are very, very useful in medicine today. And they never thought that that was going to be the case. But someone said, why not try? And by God, it worked. And then also, for those of you that have an amply supplied liquor cabinet, vodka deodorizer. I know I've heard of a lot of things with vodka, but I've never heard of this. And you know what? It helps stinky feet. Mm-hmm. I know this is wild, wacky, and weird, but it works. If you take a cloth, soak it in vodka, what happens is if you have a problem with bad foot odor, it is caused by some type of a bacteria, a fungus, and it will literally just destroy it. Vodka. I know a lot of people would say, why waste it for heaven's sake? Well, who knows knows? You never know. That may just be something that is going to come in handy for somebody who is listening to the show, and your feet will feel very happy because of it. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. When we come back, I'll give you the information on the website to find out about Medicare, and also if you're a family, where you can go to get up-to-date information by Consumer Reports. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. I just received some material from Consumer Reports, and I thought I would pass it along to you because if you're like just about everybody else in America, with all of the upheavals and the tremendous confusion and the quagmire of misery that's being put upon the American public because of people really not understanding a lot of things and setting out edicts as they have, any kind of help we can get, it's very important. And if you have members of your family that are on Medicare or Medicaid, Consumer Reports has some very good information. They have a publication that is out for the month of November. It has just been put out. They've got a whole section on this. If you can get a copy of it, I recommend it highly because they have done a wonderful job with the article. But here are two websites. One is healthlawhelper.org. Healthlawhelper.org. They'll give you a breakdown. They have had teams of people that have been working on this, and this is up-to-date information. And then also, for those of you, if you're on Medicare or if you have family members that are on Medicare, you can go to Medicare.gov. That's one way you can do it. Or I'd recommend going to consumerreports.org/Medicare. Now, all three of those websites are available to you. And I know here in the state of Washington, that which they had set up that was supposed to go into place yesterday, it wasn't working. So there were thousands upon thousands of people that were trying to get through by telephone, and their waiting times were just huge. Obviously, we have got millions and millions and millions of people that are just deeply affected by this, and they know they have a window of time that they've got to work with, especially those that are on Medicare or Medicaid. So those are three websites. Let me repeat them again, consumerreports.org/Medicare, also medicare.gov, and then healthlawhelper.org. But again, I recommend that you pick up their magazine for the month of November because they give some very, very good detail, very good information that I think can serve you well, answer questions. It may not answer all of them for you, but at least you'll have a better idea of what is going on. Now, because we had a mom today talking and the wonderful, charming book that she had, I thought I would share something with you about Finland. Now, in Finland, they've started something that I just think is absolutely marvelous. They have designed a gift to be given to moms when they have their, just after they have their babies. And it's a very simple gift. And they said since 1938 in Finland, this is a practice they've been doing since 1938, mothers and fathers, new moms and dads, would get a cardboard box, and it was used as the baby's first crib. And they had it filled with a little mattress, blankets, clothes, you know, just whatever, toiletries and much more. Now, this is something that we do in another way. In the United States, there's often baby packages that are put together for new moms in hospitals here. But I found this story very intriguing because the Finnish government itself supplies the boxes and encourages the, you know, and the different companies that supply the gifts for the parents, they want to give children a positive start. And they said what has happened because of this practice, Finland has been able to achieve one of the world's lowest infant mortality rates. Now, before they started this tradition in 1938, here's a little bit of history about it. Finnish babies would sleep in the parents' bed. 65 out of 1,000 babies died each year. When they introduced the box and the custom of having babies sleep separately from their parents, the infant mortality rate plummeted. They might have, rarely, what they make it 3.4 deaths. I don't know how you can get that kind of a percentage for every 1,000 babies. Now, that's a huge, huge drop. Now, they said over the years, the contents that would go into the box, the gift to the moms and dads, reflected historical trends. Until 1957, the kits contained material, fabric, that moms could use to make babies' clothes. Stretchy fabrics appeared in the 60s, and disposable diapers made their debut in 69. When women started working all the time, they had easy-to-clean stretch cotton. In 2006, cloth diapers reappeared for environmental reasons, and bottles were removed to promote breastfeeding. And there's a woman, her name is Taika, and she's 35 and the mother of two boys. She said, it's fun to know about the history of this, because as needs and times change, so do the boxes. And I've got a beautiful picture in front of me of a baby in one of these cardboard boxes. It's 28 inches long and contains 48 items for the new moms and dads. Of course, the babies not included. This is Donna Sebo. We're just about at the end of our time. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Enjoy your life. It's great. You've got a lot to be grateful for. Look for the best, and you'll find the sun will shine on you in more than one way. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.